Oh, good evening. This is Chaim Bravender. It's 8 o'clock in Jerusalem. A little warm today, but I hope everybody feels okay. This shiur in Parashat Ki Tavo is dedicated Li'ilui Nishmat Sheinu Bat Gershon Aleha HaShalom. One of the really strange features of Parashat Ki Tavo is this demand that Moshe Rabbeinu makes, I mean, speaking in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to set up stones near Shechem at Har Eval, at the mountain called Eval, and that on those stones to write something not perfectly clear. Let's look at the Psukim in order to get a sense of what it is that is going on. Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayetzav Moshe Vizikne Yisrael, Vayetzav Moshe Vizikne Yisrael, Et Ha'am Le'mor, and they spoke to the nation. Now that itself is not obvious. Not obvious. Usually it's Moshe Rabbeinu that commands Bnei Yisrael. Here it's Moshe Vizikne Yisrael. What does that mean? Vayitzav Moshe Vizikne Yisrael, Rashi doesn't explain it. Et ha'am le'mor, they command or pass down the command to Bnei Yisrael. Shamor et kol ha'mitzvah asher anochi mitzaveh. Now this seems to be a pretty common introduction that we've learned about in the book of Dvarim. Again and again, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei Yisrael that their job is going to be to keep the faith, to do the mitzvot, to appreciate what God has done for us. And here he says, Shamar et kol ha'mitzvah, watch carefully all the mitzvot, asher anochi mitzaveh, that I, anochi, Anochi usually refers to God, mitzaveh etchem hayom. Rashi says, shamor et kol ha-mitzvah. You see the Rashi to the left. Sorry, I didn't get the. Let's see if I can do this. Let's see, who knows? Lishon hoveh, shamor, now, immediately. Right, then he translated, I won't get into that. So he says, Shamor. Shamor is an introduction. Do it now. Do it right away. It's very important. What's so important? Vaya Pasuk Bet, Vaya Bayom Asher Tavru Tayarde. On the very day that you go across the Jordan River into Eretz Canaan, which here is called El Ha'aretz Asher, to the land that Hashem Elokecha Tatein Lach. And all these introductory phrases, again and again, God is commanding you, you better watch carefully what God tells you to do, and you do it immediately when you come into Eretz Kena'an. Vakemota lecha avanim gedolot. And you should set up stones, avanim, gedolot, big ones. Visadita otam visid. And you should cover them with a kind of whitewash. Whitewash which enables you to write on them. Sadita otam visid. Then Pasuk Gimel says, Pasuk Gimel, we'll look in a minute at Rashi, but let's look at Pasuk Gimel. First, we katavta, and you will write on these stones at Kol Divrei HaTorah Hazot. You'll write all the words of the Torah, all the words of HaTorah Hazot, this Torah that I gave you, like the scrolls of Torah that were finished by Moshe Rabbeinu on the eve of his death. Be'ovrecha, when you pass. When you go by, leman, and all of this for what reason? Asher tavola aretz asher Hashem elokecha noten lecha. You'll be able to come to the land which God has given you. You'll be able to come properly. You'll be able to come as you should be able to come. Eretz avat chalav u'dvash, reminding them that they've got a good thing coming. The land of Israel is really wonderful. Kachar debe Hashem elokei avotecha lach. V'katavta. It doesn't seem, it seems to be almost like a non sequitur of some sort. If you write on the stones all of the Torah, then something good will happen to you. You will receive the land of Israel. What sort of connection might there be between writing the entire Torah on the stones when you come into Eretz Canaan and the fact that you're going to inherit the land? I mean, we know that we're going to inherit the land. We know that that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directing us towards. So what is all of this about? Besides which, I don't know exactly whether how big these stones were and what the whitewash is. There's the seed, the whitewash. I mean, I can understand that it's easier to read with the whitewash, but how could it be that the Torah doesn't tell us what to write? What should we write on these stones? I mean, look at the Rashi. Rashi says, Hakimota lecha, you set it up. Set up these stones. The Yarden, in the Jordan River. V'achakach totzi misham acherot, and you'll take out other stones. Divne behen mizbeach b'har eval, and you'll build an altar in Har Eval. That's what it says in the next pasuk, that you have to build an altar. Nimseita ata v'tivne behem mizbeach b'har Eval. Second. Nimseita ata omer. Therefore, ergo, it turns out, Gimel Minei Avadim Hayu, that even though in this parasha that we're looking at, it looks like there's just one set of stones, there were actually three sets of stones. Shneim Asah B'Yardein, 12 was set up in the Jordan River, Uchenegdam B'Gilgal, and another 12 in Gilgal, Ukinegdam, and the third group, Behar Eval, and this is all Kideita b'Masechet Sota. It's explained in Masechet Sota. So these Avanim apparently were very special and were necessary in order to grab onto Eretz Yisrael. You had to have Avanim, and the Avanim, there were three of them, three groups of Avanim, three groups of 12, right? One in the Jordan River, one in Gilgal, and one in Har Eval. And this is explained at length in the Gemara. Pasuk Dalit, Vaya ba'avrechem et ha'yardein. I mean, the Torah doesn't mention that. The Torah is just talking about one set of stones that you have to set up in Har Eval. Takimu et ha'avanim ha'ela sh'anok mitzaveh etchem. You will establish, make them, set them in a permanent manner. Hayom Behar Eval, you'll set them up on Eval v'sadeta otam b'sid, and you'll whitewash them. And you'll whitewash them. Uvanita pasuk hey, vanita shem mizbeach v'ashem elokecha mizbeach avanim. And besides those stones, you have other stones. And the other stones, you make a mizbeach, an altar. Lo tanif aleim barzel, you should not cut them with a sword, cut them down, shake them. You just use the stones as they are. Pasuk Vav, Avanim Shleimot, Tivne et Mizbach Hashem Elokech, you should use whole stones, don't cut them. V'haleita alav olot Hashem Elokech. And you will sacrifice olot, those sacrifices that are completely consumed by fire, you will sacrifice that to God. Pasuk Zayin, v'zavachta shlamim, v'achalta sham, v'samachta lefnei Hashem Elokecha. This will be a great source of joy. So what's happening there in Har Eival? Well, they have these stones they're setting up, and they're going to sadet otam b'si, they're going to whitewash them. And after they whitewash them, they're going to write something on those stones. And finally, as far as writing, it says, Pasuk chet v'katavta al ha'avanim et kol divrei ha'Torah hazot, that on these stones, that they are now whitewashed. Kol divrei ha'Torah hazot. You should write all of the Torah on these stones. And the final words of the Pasuk, Be'er Heitev, write them very clearly. Write them in a way that they will be understood. Who's understood? So Rashi says, Be'er Heitev, you see that, Rashi? See Be'er Heitev? B'shivim Lashon, 70 different languages. So I think that this Rashi, explaining Be'er Heitev, saying Be'er Heitev has 70 languages, is actually the key to understanding what is going on with these stones, with the whitewash, with the writing. Be'er Heitev is the key. Be'er Heitev says 70 languages. And we understand what 70 languages is or are. 70 languages means it's not for us, it's for them. It's not for us, the Jewish people. We have the Torah written in Hebrew, and it's important for us to be able to read the Torah as it was written down by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's important for us, but on the other hand, we're going to make the effort. We're going to know the language of the Torah. We'll understand what the Torah really means. Understand. But these stones, whitewashed and written upon, that's not for us. We don't know these 70 languages. That could be like a question, like who wrote the Torah in these 70 languages? But we know that there are people all over the world who know these languages. These are the 70 languages that were instituted after the Tower of Babel, after the people of the world used the fact that they all understood each other improperly. And so lack of understanding was brought into the world. You see, the Torah says, I have to tell you, I have to explain to you why people speak different languages. It doesn't really make sense. If the world began with one man and one woman and their children, etc., they should all be speaking the same language. And the Torah says, no, you have to understand that the people in the world were not able to maintain a one language world. They used this ability to communicate. They used this ability to communicate poorly. And because they used that ability to communicate poorly, they built the Tower of Babel. Their punishment was that they wouldn't be able to communicate with each other so easily. They wouldn't be able to make alliances that ran against God's will. They wouldn't be able to do that. So here's Bnei Yisrael coming to, Bnei Yisrael is coming to Eretz Yisrael. And what are they going to do? They're like a horde coming in from nowhere, from the desert. They're a desert or a horde coming to destroy whatever reasonable life there was in, whatever reasonable life there was in Eretz Canaan. And of course, the Canaanites, who felt that they lived, according to the Rashi at the beginning of the Chumash, the Canaanites felt that they had every right to be where they were. And if you would press them, they would say, after all, God put us here. God put us here. That's what the Canaanites would say. So when the Jews came from the wilderness, from the desert, and said, no, we're going to conquer you, we're going to move you out, and we're going to take over, we're going to become the indigenous tribes of the land of Canaan. Of course they were going to deny that. They're going to say, of course not, we have to go to war. We can't give you our homes. God gave us the homes, and you're going to take them away. It can't be. So the argument of the Canaanites, the argument of the Canaanites would probably be an argument using Hashem as the authority of their position. They would say, God put us here, and there's no reason for us to leave. And if you want to attack us, you may. We're going to fight back. We're going to cause you trouble. We're going to make it difficult for you. And we know that there was difficulty. Philistines, for example. Philistines couldn't get rid of them. Eventually, they disappeared. But the battles that took place at the time of Yoshua and afterwards of David HaMelech, they couldn't get rid of the Philistines. So it was not obvious. It was not perfectly obvious what was going on. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu and the Zkenim, I want you to be able to pass this message on to the people of the world. The message is that we're here because HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us here. That's the message. And they have to understand that message. So write it b'shivim lishonot. Write it b'shivim lishonot, 70 languages. So that everybody in Eretz Canaan, no matter what language they spoke, and we know that they spoke a variety of languages. We know that every language that they spoke would be represented on this stone. So I think that that's the reason. The reason that you see in the Gemara and Sota, the Tanaim disagree. But what the Avanim actually looked like. I mean, it doesn't say, the Torah doesn't tell us what all of this looked like at the end. But the Tanaim speculate based on the fact that they understood what the purpose was. The purpose was to communicate the position of the Torah to the people of Canaan, that they should understand what was happening. They should understand what was happening, that what was happening was orchestrated by and determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in the Gemara, there's a difference of opinion about what was written on these stones. There are those who think that the entire Torah was written. In order for the entire Torah to be written on a stone, it had to be a pretty big stone. Or maybe it was a miraculous kind of writing. They didn't have to write it all, but miraculously it appeared on the stones. The other opinion is, Rav Sadia Gaon said it also before, about the stones that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Mount Sinai, that they contain mitzvot. The mitzvot, you have to do this, don't do that. And going to Eretz Canaan for those people was a mitzvah. I don't want to get into the argument about whether it's a mitzvah to come to Eretz Israel or not. I mean, you could say what you wish on that, but for those people, the people who left Mitzrayim to go to Eretz Canaan under the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, for those people, it was definitely a mitzvah. It's definitely a mitzvah. So the second opinion says that all the mitzvahs were written on the on these stones. And the third opinion is the book of Devarim. But in whatever you would say, the entire Torah, the mitzvahs of the Torah, the book of Devarim in the Torah, we understand that the information that's being conveyed to the peoples of the world by setting up these stones and writing on them in 60 languages, and it turned out that 60 languages was only 50 languages. Boy, it doesn't matter. What 60 languages means is that we want everybody to have access. We want to have everybody in the world understand what's going on. It's important for them to know what's going on. It's important for them to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of this project of the conquest of Eretz Canaan. Once you understand that, your attitude to the project changes, and the way you act is going to change. It seems to me that this happened to Bnei Yisrael at one other time in Jewish history, and that's when Yehoshua ben Nun sent spies to spy out the land. Yehoshua ben Nun, remember, he inherited the mantle from Moshe Rabbeinu. And he knew very well that when Moshe Rabbeinu, he was one of the spies that Moshe Rabbeinu sent. And he knew that that turned out badly. And why would he, in the position of leadership, send spies again? He sent spies to Jericho to check it out, to see how it would be. I'm not sure exactly what it was. But why did Yehoshua do that? I mean, after all, they all understood that God was in charge of this project and that the people were following the divine demand. Why did Yeshua send Meraglim, the beginning of the book of Yeshua? Why did he send spies to spy out the land in Jericho? And what happened to those spies? They got caught. They were in the house of Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute. So that doesn't sound so good. But I guess prostitutes know what's going on or something like that. So Rahab was... They were in the house of Rahab, and Rahab saved them and got them out of the back way or through the roof, and they ran away and the police couldn't catch them. And they made a deal with Rahab that if they're saved, so they'll save Rahab's family. They come back to the camp of Israel, and Yehoshua ben Nun goes to debrief them. You know, tell me what you saw, tell me what you heard, tell me what you did. And we wonder about that. I mean, it's all, they didn't do anything. They got caught right away. They spend most of the time hiding, or part of their time talking to Rahab. which could have very minor military implications. And yet here's Yoshua ben Nun debriefing them as though they did something. They did the right thing. So you see, if we will we'll someday have the opportunity to learn the parasha together, Yoshua ben Nun asks the spies, how was it? What did you find out? So I would think I didn't find out anything. But no, they say, no, we found out. We found out that the fear of God is in the people. We found that out from Rachav HaZonah. We asked her, what do the people think about what's happening? And they said, we know exactly what's happening. God is bringing the Jewish people to Eretz Canaan. And we, the people of Yericho, fear God and are accepting of this process. That's what she said. That's what Rechava Zodat said to the spies. So now let's go again. The first question was, why did Yoshua send the spies? He didn't send them for military information. He didn't send them to find out how the roads were, how the buildings were. That was not a problem. Yoshua knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would support the efforts of the Jewish people to reconquer the land. He was interested in something else. He asked the spies to find out if they knew that B'nai Yisrael, did they know that B'nai Yisrael was coming as the arm of God? That they were acting for God in the conquest of Eretz Canaan. And the spies said, yeah, they know that. Rachav HaZonah told us that. We didn't ask her about the roads or about the pit stops that we'll have to make or about the way to fight against you. We didn't ask her any of those things. We just asked her, do you know what's going on? And she said, yes. She knew that God had sent us to conquer. So Yoshua was happy. Because Yoshua, leading B'nai Yisrael, felt that it was important that B'nai Yisrael understand that there's an ethical side to the conquest. And that ethical side is, do they know that God is leading us in this path? Because if they know, then it makes sense that they should capitulate. They should accept the conditions that Yoshua laid down for the conquest of Eretz Canaan. They should accept those conditions. That was Yoshua's fear, that they didn't know they would perceive us as being barbarians coming to conquer another stretch of territory. And Yoshua didn't want that. He didn't want that to be there. He didn't want that to be the case. So we see that in these two actions, on the one hand, the miraglim that Yoshua sent, which were not sent to spy out the land, but was sent to find out if the people understood what was happening so that the action that he would take as the military leader of Am Yisrael, that those actions would be moral and represent an ethical position. Same is true about the stones in the parsha of Ki Tavo, the stones in the parsha of Ki Tavo. Those stones in the parsha of Ki Tavo had information written in the languages, the lingua franca of the people who were being dealt with. That's where, and they would be able to access that information. and to understand. If they didn't understand previously, they would understand by this admission that B'nai Yisrael made by putting up the Torah on the stones, that they were following the directives of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? And that's Moshe Rabbeinu's, one of Moshe Rabbeinu's last commands to B'nai Yisrael, and probably the way Yoshua ben Nun learned or understood that for him sending the spies to spy out the land would be a reasonable thing to do. Okay. All the best. I'll see you next week.